a fella part of my hand, so I hope I'm going to be okay with this one, but it's a cork microphone. I'm sure it's going to be fine. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm sure you come here every week, but thanks anyway. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me, and thanks to all the Limerick people who came down to support me. The first poem I'm going to read is called Messy Verse. I'm dedicating it to my bed in Limerick because that's where I like to write poetry. So, messy verse. I like to write poems in darkened rooms where curtains give no purchase to light-filled chinks. Pens and pencils lost among frowsy sheets. Fish for rhythms, fast and bright as perch, swim along a sea blue spread. Words that flow through cake and chocolate fragments, not caught in time. When this pen fills up with sap green ink, could I give birth to something then? An early primrose on the pillow, a galaxy of daisies winking in dim light. For no new couplets come to me at neat oak desks. No inspiration gained from knowing here Yeats penned his latest verse to mold. Give me cigarettes and ends and butts and crumbs in a rumbled bed. This muse likes chaos best. I'm having really great competition behind me here from the singer. Thank God he doesn't have a microphone or I'd be a goner. Okay. So this one is Birds. I live on the front of the River Shannon, and so I have a great opportunity to see swans and... I was going to say ducks, but you don't get ducks right by the River Shannon. Herons and small creatures and seagulls. And I have a little balcony, so I put out food for the birds. And I'd like to read this also because it mentions February, and we're in February. Birds, create an air show. It's easy. A few stale crumbs on a rainy day will do. Big enough to wheedle seabirds up the Shannon estuary for a rollicking epic at the tail end of February. I cheer the flash of glide-by white-tipped wings before their bright return to my balcony, in search of only one thing that must be laid onto them. Sweet cake bumps of raisins, moistened by river mist, pounced upon, bickered about by crows, sober reverend mothers, black worshippers who come to commune at the bird feeder, who vow this sacred place, this place their sacred cup, croaking out holy orders to finches and other sopranos. This is not a choir stall. Know your place and manners. From my ear on the third floor, I observe, while the radio squawks global warming and war, I cry to the airborne, stretch my wings again, peck through last season's catalogues, canaries, turkey, gander. There is a young woman I know in New York City who up until very recently was a lap dancer. She's a Russian, and she's what we would call undocumented, which really means that she's a wetback. But she's a young Jewish woman, and she came from Russia to Israel, and then she went on to the States. So when I wrote this poem originally, it said praise to Allah. Then I got nervous because I thought, Jesus, if this book fell into the hands of a fundamentalist or something, maybe they'd put a fatwa out against me. And so I changed it. I did, I got frightened. I changed it to Buddha. But I praised to Buddha, but I'm going to, just nobody looks like fundamentalist around here. So I'm going to put it back to Allah for tonight. I hope there is a name right in. Whoa! So, Ronnie is the name of the party, but she calls herself Aroni. So, Aroni, the Russian lap dancer, ex-Israeli army soldier, body sleek as a fawn, makes $1,000 a night, she says. Her small toed ass pole glides to serpentine rhymes. Hands and eyes explore, clients gurgle like babies. Ronnie, the Russian lap dancer, a Democrat, prays to Allah, eats hummus, marks the distance, meets a husband for a green card, or someone to shag, she says. How about shagging God, I say. Nobody needed. It's spring is coming and many young women's and old women's thoughts go towards not love so much but diet. And I was watching after it's obviously true, someone's laughing, and they say if you laugh, somebody laughs, it always means it's true. But I was watching Operation Transformation the other night, and I was really tempted to go on the internet, and you can follow one of the five people that are, you know, doing it and getting their weight out. But unfortunately, sense prevailed, common sense, and I didn't do that. But this poem is called The Diet. Witness this woman, spirit caught in a sugar spell, a Jamocha black magic sugar spell. While she screams for ice cream, time and spring's primrose sun loosen a cocoon of heaviness, exposing so much flesh and dread of summer. Witness her body, untamed hips, constant obstacles to fashion's tyranny. Sisyphus shackles to bathroom scales, forever chained to a thin task. Witness her begin her Spartan striving, counted calories replacing sweetness sucked from cupcakes, fruitcakes, and wild blueberry pie. Witness this heavy toiler, belly doomed to rise when her vanquished appetite returns, and pounds roll on again, boulders to be pushed again by Monday's large promises, threats, treadmill time, and 8 8-ounce glasses of pure, monotonous water. I'm fascinated by that guy behind me. I don't know if anybody else can hear him besides me. He's screaming now, so I got to out screaming. Okay, so, the muse. I have to really look. He's got an audience of 3 women and they're all dancing and having a great time. I hope nobody goes out and leaves me here on my own. It's just looking great out there. Okay, the next one is the muse. You know how when you kind of write and you don't want to kind of write, but there's this thing, I always call it the nudge, going on at the back of the mind, and it's going, like nudging you, you got to write, and you don't want to sit down and have to see an empty page and you've no inspiration. Anyway, one day I just said, okay, that's it, I'm going to sit down. I don't care if I'm going to sit here for life, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to really see what's going to happen. So within a very short period, this little poem came. Courting the muse. Troubled by her absence, I turned the radio off, allowing silence and the traffic's rhythm in. Inhaled, exhaled, and wondered if she'd come. My living room floor blurred to sand, and sunbeams licked it, and out of the sea a mermaid, who shimmied and shook her fishy hips, her wine brown hair wild as a dancer's veil. You hardly know me, put everything before me, and give me such little time to grow, she said. And I knew I could never leave her again. Traveling with Paddy. I carried Padraig Cadna to Barcelona, the Penguin edition. Two black boots on the cover, remnants of the farmer called cobbler. Their toes scuffed on cantankerous days tilling the land, or blistered at hoolies that held no hope. Laces loose as though yesterday he stepped out of them. I prized him from the stony glow of Monaghan, this anti-self to Yeats, and left my constant companion behind, so no arguments would ensue. Our room looks down on Las Ramblas, and I lay him on the pillow. No locker, no lamp in this humble hostale. Beneath the window, caged canaries sing and wait for customers as I gather up maps and purse and keys, eager to explore Maria del Mar, Puerta de Angel, and the Euro Shop for a pen for Paddy. Okay, coming from Limerick, we have the infamous Magdalen Convent Laundry there, or one of them. I don't need to have to tell you very much about those. But I wrote 7 poems anyway, marking that outrageous period in Irish history, and I'd like to read 2 tonight. The first one's called Daddy's Girl. She'd have gone to Dublin to visit an aunt and have it there. It. Not a baby boy or girl, but countless midnight jabs from her dad in the bed where her mother placed her instead. Her young mouth shut with a fist of frocks, baubles, and once a whole sovereign and the promise of a foreign holiday for just the 2 of them. All this before he delivered her, swollen, to the Magdalen. Caught in the cradle of her ear, his pet names, brazen hussy, strumpet, strap. And that Magdalen Convent Laundry had a laundry, obviously, but it had something, a fire that boiled the water for the clothes, and there's a colossal chimney stack which the smoke comes up through, or it did. It's in art school now, fortunately, but this is a poem where the chimney speaks. The Magdalen Laundry chimney speaks. I belch out news of what goes on below, dispatch smoky signals that float unheeded across your fine trim lawns, trying to tell you for heaven's sake. And as my smuts assail your immaculate wash, your husband's shirts balloon along the line, empty sleeves that hold promises to dry before the evening Angelus bell, but you fail to read my message. Consider this, a false dawn before your husbands reach for you again. Sorrowful girls, bellies heavy with their big mistake, stoop low to coax my fire awake, till my boiler spits out water for the city's endless wash. While they wait behind these shameful walls for a new life to begin. The November before last, I was in New York City. So that was the month after the October crash, when I suppose the store owners thought that nothing was ever going to crash, and they would have bought their winter merchandise in the spring, so they would have buckets of it Anyway, I was walking on Lexington Avenue and I saw all these people really intent on going somewhere. So I thought I'm going to follow these and see what's going on. So this poem is called The March, and it came as a result of watching these guys. Lexington Avenue, a lookalike to the final parade of the Third Reich, where an army of grey coats wear hairpieces like badges of honor in the oncoming dark. They march in long uneven lines to Bloomingdale's pre-Christmas sale. Old soldiers, survivors of mergers, bailouts, takeovers, lagging indices, and all the dollar wars of Wall Street. Among them, the Botoxed, detoxed, permatanned trout mouths, their x-ray thin bodies feasting on slogan-rich diets. Because we're worth it! All hooked on the hypnotic tonic of shopping. They advance towards the great sale of the noughties. Soft-gloved hands clutching yellow flyers, 70% off. Armani, Boss, and Klein, ready to abandon their sturdy hangers and let themselves go. Okay. I was at a Suvi retreat in New Mexico a number of years ago, and it was one of these phone calls. Because I spent most of my life out of the country, it was two phone calls. I got one. The first phone call was, I remember, telling me my father died. Now this is the second phone call. So this about my mother's death. So this is the poem that came as a result of that. Always present. Your mother died today, she said. Knees high, eyes blind, I ran to the Holy One, who arranged me in his arms like you would for someone you loved. He said, she has not left you. She's in the wind and trees. Now October unwraps her ochre leaves that fall on my bare feet. And when this flesh decays and these bones scatter like matches from a careless hand, I will not fear the drumbeat as November empties autumn. My breath, the chant of wind in silver poplars. And companion poem out of that was at the White House one night, and someone said something, and it just triggered this poem, The Mourners. In sorrow's living room, she sits beside an empty grate. Nerves taut as bowstrings, while dust bunnies skitter in corners and funeral bunches wither in dried up vases. Two good neighbors come to sorrow's living room, faces prearranged in bloom, until sherry paints them florid, until cheese and savory biscuits are offered. Your mother had fine hats, one said, and what will you do with them now? And in sorrow's living room, the other said, had I that mantel clock, I'd recall her passing each time it chimed the hour. Time heals, they said in sorrow's living room, and what will you do with her dresses? As they pictured a girl in gingham before them, and not an old new orphan. In my, we call it my youth, I spent a few months in Jamaica, and I was with a partner at the time, and we ran out of money. For some reason, don't ask me why we brought a tent. And so we were stuck tenting in Jamaica. Jamaica is very magical, but I really wouldn't recommend anybody to go tenting there. well, for one thing, we had to stay in this tent sides beside the guard, and he kept his slide down all the time. I remember that, going in and out, going in and out. He always seemed to be very slide, always seemed to be down. So but he was getting paid for this. Anyway, there's three words in this poem. One is frangipani, which is a beautiful, big, pink, perfumed flower. And the other one is desardes. Desardes are very sweet little cakes. And the third is a third word that might be, I had to actually look this up before I came, calabash. Calabash is a fruit. It's like this. It's like an hourglass, but it's circular, the top and circular bottom, and the poor Jamaicans cut it in two, and they scoop out the fruit, and they dry the bones, and they eat off those bones, and we bought two of those bones, because like I said, we had no money. Okay, hungry for Jamaica. Bring me back to Jamaica, and to you and me, to frangipani perfumed weeks, back before heavy weather squalls left us shipwrecked, to an easier time when we rode the Minnie to Montego Bay. Do you remember our pale northern faces, waxen seashells, so out of place among umber browns and burnt sienna tones, and the tune that swung through the hot bus as locals, red hens and ducks, squawked and swayed round bends, past Runaway to Falmouth, where we all got out at spicy nights for gizzardes. Our tongues sweetened with treacle and coconut. The driver cool, all irie, because time was endless. All cool running on, all cool running then. Do you still dream of Jenny's special cakes, the reggae nights, our heads light as calabash bones, the dawn's scarlet arm on the ocean, while we giggled for a fix of bread, for anything to munch on, for the munchies. Very magical, Grace Jamaica. Cinerama. Is there anybody here who, maybe yes, maybe no, who spent their childhood in Saturday afternoon matinees? Okay, you don't need to raise your hand. Anyway, that's what I did. And I used to go to the Savoy Cinema in Limerick, which they knocked down. It was a beautiful imitation Art Deco inside. And I used to think it was magic for me, because I always thought it was like a Moorish castle. Anyway, they knocked it down and they put up the Marriott. And now they've taken down the name of the Marriott and they put the Savoy back up, but it's now a hotel. So I saw it when they were doing it, taking it down, that is. Okay, Cinerama. We watched the Savoy come down. A caterpillar's grotesque claws pincers every weathered brick, grips the lost audience of this last picture show in a dirge of slow memory. Our bodies swathe in soft debris, breathe a dusty call as disconnected wires lurch naked through what's left behind, coupling us to starry childhoods spent at Saturday matinees. Quiet now. Wait. Spotlight falls on two hostesses, short, sexy, taffeta skirts, partly hidden by pretty pennies. Another strap about their shoulders offers a suspended box, chocks, crisps, cigarettes. Up from the netherworld in tux and tails, Orpheus O'Brien rides his Compton organ, devilishly electrified in red, green, and neon yellow, coaxing waltzes, polkas, and sarabands. Grand arpeggios rise and slide, Chopin, down faux deco walls, and plummet smoky afternoons. Quiet now. Wait. golden curtains part. Boys fake deadly humorous swoons to the lion's cellulite glower. The woman universal lithe and lovely, a blue goddess, torch held high by an eloquent hand, announces the magic hours come round. This poem is for anybody who's ever been to the Burn in Clare. And I just say go there and experience it. I saw a little fox there one day, and I wrote this poem as a result. Foxy. A lone cub lopes the road at evening time. Her orchids hide in limestone pockets stitched to lunar fields. And summer seal is everywhere. I know he'll not be snared nor end hooked to some old lady's shoulder or trim with russet fur a stylish coat. When nights have chill, he'll strike out for Limerick, look me up with a bark of laughter at my door, share my fire, sprawl on green velvet cushions, rival to any spinny lair. His topaz eyes wide as meadows, his ear polite, wrapped round my sly foxy chatter, chatter of shape-shifting, woman to vixen, vixen to feral moon. Is that enough, Paul? People had enough?
Enough?
Yeah.
Give us another
one. One girl. You have to say that to all the girls, right? Go on.
Why would you think this thing?
Been around a bit a while. Anyway, see. A couple more?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Anybody who ever, this is for anybody, as they say on the radio, I'm sending this out to. So I'm sending this out to anybody who's ever been depressed or who's still depressed. Right. Okay.
The word.
Black dog. He blew in without a hint. Unwanted as a summer cold. A German shepherd head settled on my cream cushioned armchair. His porcelain glint bored in. Bawled me out for I knew not what. I offered liver, mackerel, tasty chicken morsels. His lips, an Achtung snarl, a glare of teeth between. I offered muffins, maple cream, chocolate swirls. His eyes curled up, breath, a rank blast, tongue fast as a blade that lashed at everything. He barked through tales of Rin Tin Tin and Lassie. Only the Baskerville hound from the local library tricked him into quiet. Friends came, packed us off to the ocean, sold his skin, making magic of my body. I swam, turned, waved one massive dorsal fin, and watched him at the wave's demented edge. So the salt water got rid of it. Okay, does anyone over here read Christmas poems in the month of February, right? Because it's about 300 and many days after Christmas, and 330 days after Christmas. So this is in advance of Christmas poem. Holy night. Good to be alone in an unfamiliar city. Where a crescent moon slivers a navy blue sky. Bless the touch of Bethlehem, mirage of magi bearing gold and gifts, desert sand caught in a crease of silken robes. Bless the magic carpet spun with festive lights, weaving over Calle Fuencarral, where Messiah soars from an unknown appartamento. Bless this narrow room that allows no space for old accounts. Wide enough for peace to sneak through graying lace curtains. Here I unhook the heavy loneliness that weighs me down. Bless this single bed, jaded quilt, and 60 watts casting long shadows over time. Small TV, high as heaven, that blinks on rusting pipes, which heated this place. Steady as a metronome, their soft hiss drips on the cold welcome floor. That's it. Thank you.